Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Red Light Podcast Redux. I am your host, Gina Savage, and I want to welcome you and all of our listeners, WROM Radio listeners in Detroit, and internet users worldwide, subscribers to our show on iTunes. Thanks for joining us today. I am joined in the Red Room with, let's just first, I'm going to say, she's Greek. Hello, Greeks. She's Greek. She's an actress, writer, director, stand-up, radio host. You've been heard on Opie and Anthony, Sirius, XM, United Stations Network, so the Mike Buschetti phenomenon. Yes, Irene Bremis is here.
Thank you, Gina.
Thank you for...
I love you. Thank you so much for having me. And this is a Red Room. I want people to know that you're not just pulling that out, you know, like pie in the sky or some stuff like that. This is like a serious Red Room, and I love it. It's very sexy in here.
Thank you. It's sexy.
It is sexy.
I've lured many a loser in here.
Thank you.
And welcome to the program.
And that's how it starts off here at the Red Light Podcast.
I love it.
Let's talk more about you. You also have you did a web series called Plan B.
I did. Plan B. It's a web series which features a lot of great actors, like Natalie Brown, who's one of the stars of The Strain, and Lisa Berry, who's one of the stars from Continuum, and Rachel Feinstein, who's coming out with her own show on Comedy Central, and a lot of other up-and-coming breakout comics. Plan B is it's a web series about women, like women that are trying to pursue their dreams, or as I like to call it, chasing the dragon, in their 20s, and then the 20s turn into their 30s, and then eventually the 30s turn into their 40s, and you're like, whoops, my eggs are all gone, and all my eggs are in one basket, so what do I want to do? And you come to that point, the crossroads. You know, when,
yes. Well, I did watch a few of them today, actually, just in preparation.
Uh-huh.
Was the first one, I can't remember, that was the first one with Mark DeMeo. Is that the first one or is that the second one?
Yeah, that's, I think that might
that's
be.
That's a comic friend of ours, very funny, former police officer,
Mark
DeMeo.
Yeah.
Yes. Can I describe to the folks what you did?
Sure,
in that?
Yes, okay. It's online, so go
so
for
it's
it.
Online, and you see Irene in her car. She's driving, obviously, and she's got some gay porn in you know, just off to the side, right?
Because I find man on man hotter.
Man on man action.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Anyway.
And you have like a dildo or vibrator or whatever
yeah.
you've got in the car. Dad's listening to this. Every time I do a podcast, I'm like, my dad better not find this one. But you're driving and you're stimulating yourself.
Yes,
you're masturbating. Like from England. You're masturbating.
Masturbating, darling.
It's
wonderful.
In the car.
Cheerios.
And then our friend Mark, very handsome.
Yes, very handsome.
Pulls you over.
Mm-hmm.
I like what he says to you.
I just had to get him in uniform. That's why I just constructed that whole scene. But and that was at the advice of my friend in on the web series, you know, instructing me to reconnect with my body because I felt like I didn't really have much of a sex drive anymore. And I find driving relaxing, and the perfect time to do it
would be driving
and I just happened to get pulled over, and then Mark pulls me over, but he was so great in it. I thought he was so funny, and
he's very funny. I like his last line to you is like, he says, save the masturbation for when you get home, it's safer for everybody. Yes, it's safer, and certainly in my world, for everybody that it stays within the confines of the Red Room. But that is just one example. You do talk about other things in Plan B, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
But at least people are introduced to you and your style. Right off the bat,
you're
kind of a ballsy chick.
Not for children. And just about, like, you know, that conundrum. What do you want to do? Do you want to have kids? You're running out of time. Your career didn't work out. Sadly, that's kind of how I felt when I got to that point. I'm like, oh, well, I'd pass on children for a career. Absolutely. And then when that doesn't seem to be going the way that you want it. And listen, everybody has different levels of how they're... I wouldn't say that... there are different levels of success, you know. I'd like to think that I'm in this game. I've done a lot of great things. And if I, you know, retired after the show, that that could happen. I'd still be proud of certain things that I did. You know,
you've done a lot,
but you know, then obviously you can't help but compare yourself to other people. So when you come to that point, then you're like, maybe I should have been a mother. That would have been a valuable thing for me to do. And then then it's too late.
All right. Well, let's talk about
God's pulled the plug on your uterus.
Yeah,
and on your eggs.
Yeah. That's true. But, yeah. You know, sometimes it's just not in the stars for us, whatever right. that may be. We did make our choices.
Yes,
I don't have children.
Planned Parenthood.
Either.
That's true.
Plan B. Well, let's hope Planned Parenthood gets to stay in business.
Yes.
But anyway, that be that as it may. I want to talk about comparisons. We had the Academy Awards mm-hmm. were just on. And
yes.
A couple of our friends were, you know, on there. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know Chris Rock personally, mm-hmm. but he did a phenomenal job. Did you watch it?
Oh, yeah. He brought it. He brought it big time. He addressed the elephant in the room and he just killed it. I think that his job was really, really difficult because it's like a very, you know, very volatile topic right now. And it's very and he just brought it. And I think he really has a great way of making people understand and putting people at ease and making them sort of laugh. But I hate to sound cliche, but making them think.
Yeah.
You know, and he did that so effectively. I think he's extraordinary for how he pulled that off. He did just, I don't think anybody else could have done it, because it's one of those things that you still have to stay within the perimeter where you're kind of joking, but at the same time, you're really making some prudent, you know, whatever, you know, you want to get your point across to people because it's such an important thing. And it is so biased and it needs to be addressed. So he did that.
Yeah,
amazingly.
He did. He did a great job. I saw the clips, and I know our good friend Rich Voss was a participant, and I think he wrote some. I don't know what.
Oh, did he?
I don't know what jokes. I mean, because I always listen for
a joke.
I didn't
hear anything about a pussy or. No, I'm just kidding. Rich Voss, really?
Or falling into another one. Did you ever trip and fall into somebody's pussy?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but Rich wrote some of the. I don't know what he wrote specifically for the award show, but mm-hmm. I'm very happy that he got
it
to be a part
of that. Yeah, and you know
what?
It's not even the jokes that he, you know, it's him, his personality. He could have said anything. He just has a way he has that kind of charisma that just reaches people and makes them understand,
yes.
You know, without, you know, making anybody feel, I mean, they were really awkward though. Did you see those tight eyes? I even tweeted that out. I was like, they had those tight jawed smiles. Yeah, they were awkward.
Oh,
and they needed to be.
The audience?
They needed to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, well,
you know what I mean?
We all need to feel
uncomfortable. Yeah, we do. If we're gonna change, we do need to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah,
it's
true.
I've
been uncomfortable many times this year. It's been a lot of changing. It's a very uncomfortable year. And even Kevin Hart was there. And I know I talk about this on other podcasts about how Kevin, you know, from the early days at the Boston Comedy Club, you know, he always looked like somebody out of the gate that was going to be successful. And there he was. And even, you know, to Chris's joke about, you know, how to take the job. Otherwise, it's going to Kevin.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah.
But anyway,
funny. Yeah.
It's interesting as we were talking about making those comparisons, because, you know, here are our friends and colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're doing very well. And it's nice to see. And then there's, you know, the rest of us. I think Mike Vecchione even said there are the stars, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there are, you know, those of us that orbit.
Right.
You know,
and then there's the fog. I think I'm part of the fog. The
no,
precipitation
you're
in the clouds.
Not precipitation.
Nebulous, baby. I'm just nebulous.
No.
I like that word. It just makes you seem so cool and nonconformist. Anyway.
So that being said, and not only are you, well, you're not only are we both in comedy, but I want to tell people how you started in comedy, and you also became a fitness guru. You've
and, so sweet.
And you and you I mean you've trained some, you know, successful folks in their own right. So tell us about how I know you grew up in Boston, right? Mm-hmm. Was it Boston, Massachusetts?
Yeah, Lexington.
How close is that?
I
know
10 miles.
All right, so it's right there.
Yeah, it's right there.
Okay, it's right there. Tell us about the Greek parents. I have a stereotypical view in my mind of what's going on there, but they had an arranged marriage, and then you have a couple of siblings.
Mm-hmm.
You tell us, give us a picture.
So they were an arranged marriage. My father actually Asperger's. He had Asperger's, severe Asperger's. He was
Your
high
father.
Functioning. Yes, he
okay.
was. Before they had a diagnosis for that, and I always thought that's why I had, in turn, I had an autistic brother. I feel like there's a definite connection to Asperger's, autism, mainly passed on through the mail, even though they fucking tried to blame it on the woman with refrigerator moms. It was like this film during the 70s where they actually tried to blame the mother for mother's frigidity towards her baby, because they try to blame the woman for everything, sweetie. But it, as it turns out, it's the man's fault, mostly.
I wouldn't argue that.
He was the loveliest thing. My dad, I love him. He was the sweetest man. I still have never met a sweeter man in my life. But yeah, my brother is severely autistic, so that was a lot for my mother, because they barely knew each other. And now she was stuck with my dad, who she thought was just, you know, his idiosyncrasies were American idiosyncrasies. She didn't realize, you know, no one knew what was really wrong.
Right, back
disheveled,
then.
Kind of socially unaware and painfully shy, but sort of ineffective in like just sort of infiltrating the workforce and fitting in. He was all those things. He just didn't really fit in, which made it very difficult for him to work and support the family. And then my brother on top, it was a very... you know, listen, I love my parents. They did a great job. I think my mother's the most extraordinary person in the world, and I love my dad, but it was a very, you know, difficult situation growing up. I thought it was normal, and then I met normal, and I felt really bad about myself, but I'm in therapy, thank God.
Well, so. Yeah, we all are. Yeah, you got to be in therapy if you're I think you have to be. You have to be in therapy if you're in comedy. You have to, you know, but that's a whole other thing, because I think, you know, I say this a lot, too. We have big egos, low self-esteem, combinations of, like, isms, whatever ism you are, whether, you know, you're a sex addict, love addict, you know, alcoholic. It's, you know, it all feeds our comedic tendencies, I suppose. So you need some form of rational encouragement.
Somebody, you need that whiteboard to bounce off of. Yeah.
Why
definitely.
Do you do that, Irene? Why do you do that? Why do you? I used to have a therapist, to digress. I used to have this therapist. She would say, well, how does that feel? You know, like, how does that feel? How does it feel? I'll tell you how it feels. It feels like this. And then you're just ranting. Like, I need some practical advice here. Like, and mostly I would always say, am I crazy? Am I crazy? And she'd say, well, this is true. She'd say, no, you're not crazy. The end.
Well, that's like, nice. At least she gives you the final diagnosis. That's great.
So you're not everyone else in your world is crazy. Yeah, Gina. No. But nice. So you're in therapy for these things now.
Yes.
But growing up, how does all this? Because they were kind of a volatile couple, though. Your parents, right? A little bit.
You know, they didn't
loud.
Really, they were very loud. You know, we're Greek. That's
right.
How we talk.
Right.
We never ever whisper ever. I don't think I've ever heard my parents whisper. We're like, Greeks are like Chinese. You know how the Chinese always seem like they're yelling
yes,
the whole time?
What is
I
with
feel
that?
Like Greeks, are the same thing. They just yell a lot. So there was, it was never peaceful. And of course that would always send, you know, my brother,
it would send him
off into one of his tirades,
sure.
You know, 'cause autistic children, very sensitive to external noise and they start to bang violently. So that would always set off one of his fits. But,
And were you the caregiver to your brother in those scenarios?
You know, I always loved my brother and cared for him. I always was ready to throw down with anybody that would make fun of him. He actually went to high school with me. Talk about difficult.
Yes.
Okay.
So you are very
nurturing.
And he
would flip tables in the cafeteria. So, you know how it is being in high school.
You know,
you already feel awkward and like you don't fit in. Now you have your brother who's flipping tables, and they don't know what's wrong with him because he's not really, you know, like what they said, retards back there. You know, they clumped everybody together. That's what they called him.
That's what they did.
You know, that's what they did. He was, they didn't know what he had, you know, but he was flipping stuff over. It was definitely an experience. I think it gave me a lot of strength, though.
I would think so. I mean, you're here today as proof of that. So, when did you discover your comedic gene?
Okay, I was always funny. I know that sounds terrible, but I was always used humor as as a tool to get along with everybody. So I did have that, but I never wanted to be a stand-up. You know how some people, it was always their dream to do stand-up.
Right.
It was never my dream to do stand-up. I was a writer, and I was pitching a show to William Morris. It was like a cooking show, a comedy cooking show in the late 90s.
Okay.
Or was it 2000? Okay, I think it was 2000. They liked the idea, and I wanted to be in it. And they said that I had to start doing stand-up if I wanted to be talent. And I wanted to be in it. And I started doing stand-up. But it was never my real dream. Before stand-up, I started making films. That's what I was doing.
Okay.
I was making films. I love filmmaking and writing.
And this is college time? Or
this is just your right own? Out of college.
Okay.
You know, right out of college.
What'd you study?
When I was in college?
Yes.
Communications.
Okay. So, all right. So there, yeah, it's a natural
exactly.
fitting thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and the cooking show, I know it didn't happen, I take it?
The cooking show never happened.
Okay.
Because then that just went on the back burner. Pa-da-pum.
Oh, man.
I couldn't help it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's good though. I like it.
So then I just started doing stand-up. And then, you know how addictive stand-up can be. You know, then you have something to prove to yourself and you keep doing it and whatever. So I just kept doing it and doing it. I don't really feel that anymore. There's
about
a level of maturity. Yeah. I don't feel like I have anything to really prove. I mean, sure, you want to conquer new things and you always want to do a great job. But I can rely on myself more. I don't feel like I have to constantly prove my, that's what kept me going and doing. I mean, in the beginning, you know, you have to get up all the time doing crappy rooms 4 times a night, 5 times a
yes.
week for years and years you're doing that. And then at some point, you know, you can relax. Like Tom Shalhoub, you know who Tom is.
Oh,
right?
Of course.
I love Tom.
And now he's the host of The Red Eye.
So well deserved and such an amazing job and such a great guy. And I absolutely love him. He gave me the most prudent advice. He was like, Irene, at some point when you've been doing it for like 10 plus years, you can relax, you know. And it's true. You don't have to get up every 5 seconds. You can actually you can actually be a little bit more selective about what you're going to do. And as soon as I started doing that, when I felt comfortable and I could rely on myself and I could trust myself, I felt like doors started to open up. I mean, yeah, some other doors open up for people much bigger than my doors. But a lot of opportunities started opening
yes.
up and unfolding because of what I wasn't willing to do anymore. You know, I think in this business, sometimes you screw yourself by taking things that are beneath you at some point, because people will start to, it's a judgy business. People will see you doing the same crappy room or barking outside a room for 12 years and they'll be like, I don't know.
Right. And that's the thing about this business is that you can be in it a long time and people get a sense of, I know Irene. I know Gina. I know what they're capable of. And you don't necessarily, it's a tricky thing because, you know, we can reinvent ourselves over and over again,
right.
and you never know when that person is going to take off. You just—that's the beauty of this thing too. It can seem like endless, grind,
and then all of a sudden, boom! You know, you're on a different level. I think it really is important, though, in stand-up, Gina, to say no to certain things. Like, really, it is very important. I've gotten that advice from what I consider to be A-comics, and it is the absolute truth. You should actually say no to things that aren't, I mean, it's either quality at some point, maybe you have to run your set, but if you're doing something on a, like, I know, like, say somebody is doing, like, I'm going to use an example of myself, all right?
Okay.
I was doing this one show continuously every Saturday and I was getting up. Sorry, sweetie. I'm just going to say that if he's listening. Anyway, I was doing it. It was great. I grew. It was amazing. It was always packed out. It was a great show for me to do every single Saturday.
Is this in New York?
Years and years. Yes, yes.
Okay.
At some point though, people see you doing that show every Saturday and they're like, where else are you going? You know what I mean? And it could be counterproductive for you. It could actually take you down a notch. And, the minute I stopped doing that, I mean, you could be MIA.
See,
people
now
don't know
I
want to
know what show that was.
Well,
you're not going to say.
I'm not going to say because I love this person.
Was it a themed show? Was it like a theme?
It's
was
just
it,
a weekly show where, you know, like you get up and it's great and it's a great show, packed out. But I just felt like every single week, if you're in the same spot, okay, yeah, you're getting, I feel like you need to broaden your horizons. You have to say, you have to be able to rely on yourself and turn something down to get something better at some point. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, I think you always have to try different things, definitely.
Yeah.
So to that end, what else have you said no to? With respect to that show, you said no to
I started saying no to a lot of stuff, actually,
okay.
Believe it or not, you know? Yeah, I mean, and I'm in no position to say no. I'm just kidding. I started saying no to things that I didn't want to do anymore. You know what I mean? I always felt like I had to get up at stage time. I got got to do it. It's stage time. It's stage time. It's, and I wasn't really relying on myself. You know what I mean? I mean, I have to be able to trust myself. I'm going on 16 years. I'm doing this as I'm doing stand up for almost 16 years. 15 years I've been doing stand up. Okay. So if I can't rely on myself and I'm not passing on certain things, and the minute I did, you know, what happens is doors open, you start getting booked, and then, you know, I'm doing more road work, and I'm headlining on the road, and I'm getting to do this and that. Little doors open, you know, they open, and then that door leads into the next door, into the next door. I think that was very helpful for me. It was helpful for me to say no, actually.
Well, that's all right. So I want
not to everything. Like you have an extraordinary show. I want to tell everybody your show, Broadly Funny, Supporting the
Thank
Chicks,
you.
Awesome quality show.
Marla Schultz,
I would never
tonight,
say
yes.
no to yeah. your show. Okay,
thank you.
But there's certain, like, you know, there's just certain things that you can say no, like that weekend or weekday bar show with like four people,
right?
Trudging
of
to
course.
The rain.
Right.
At this point, no.
Right,
it's that simple.
At this point,
I'd rather
in your
stay
life
home,
and career. Right,
and paint my fingernails. You know what I mean? Or, you know,
I wish I could stay
or trim
home
my
and
bush.
Paint.
Yeah, exactly. like Sorry, you're always working. It's true.
Always working. Always working.
Sorry about
so
that.
I want to go back to William Morris, the cooking show, and the reason I want to do this is because, all right, how do you get? I want to tell like novice stand-ups too, or anyone interested in this field. Like, how do you get that meeting? How does that even happen?
Well, I have one of my really good friends in this business.
Okay.
Let me tell you what. Friends help friends. This is not just me saying that. You know, I was talking to Rachel Feinstein. I was talking to Dan Natterman over the weekend, or not the weekend, last week. We did this reading together. Such a great guy. So talented. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love him. Rachel's one of my best friends. I think of her as like she's younger than I am. Not that much, sweetie. But anyway, so I think of her as like my little sister, actually.
Right.
But, you know, and... they'll openly admit, you know, this is how we do things here. We get things from friends.
I agree.
That's
with
how
that.
We do it. You know, I say, if I go on an audition, I would never want those. I always said that I'd rather a sex tape of me giving multiple blowjobs than one of my audition tapes surface. Seriously. That's how debasing they are, Gina. They're humiliating.
Yeah.
I always do a horrible job. It's horrifying. And I think that people, when they get to the next level, it's because their friends in the business help them out. And that's how I got this opportunity. My friend, very dear friend of mine, was Conan Smith's...
who I love and who I mentioned.
I love Conan Smith, and I've had dirty thoughts about him as well.
Who hasn't?
His wife's not listening. His hotness, okay?
Who hasn't?
Well,
Conan, I hope you're listening.
She could join in, along with Steve. Anyway, so... they did this... she pitched it to them, and Conan really tried to help me in the beginning. He was submitting me to a lot of great stuff, really great stuff, but I was too young back then, and that could be more damaging when you're not ready.
Sure.
You know, but like I said, so she was the person that sort of made this happen. Without her, it would have never happened at all. So that's it. It's always a friend. It's not always a friend, but... In 90% of the time, it's a friend.
Yeah.
It's a friend.
Certainly in our business. I mean, yeah. And look, you know, it's true outside of this business, too, because when I had a five-year sort of, you know, I got fired from a multi-million dollar club called Comics, no longer in existence.
Yes.
Although,
why would they do that?
Because they fired everybody. But I really wasn't. I don't know. I won't get into it. But anyway, I detoured into real estate law, and like, I'm like, how does that even happen? But when you're in the entertainment
business,
I guess
I'm just jealous that you're so intelligent that you could just detour into like a complete career.
They were very, very kind. I had a learning curve, and but I caught on quick. I mean, when it's New York City real estate, if you're a native New Yorker, you kind of know the deal here.
Right.
So it was just like terms I didn't know, like notice to garnishee. I don't know what this means. You know, I don't know what a treble, you know, whatever the thing is called. Now I'm forgetting it, but there were all these terms I had to come up with, like treble damages and things like that. I had no idea what the heck that was, but now I know. Mm-hmm. So now I'm versed in that. But anyway, so now you're doing stand up and what is the, okay, there's a lot of things because you're a woman in comedy and I know because I've treated men in comedy, certainly. Were you sexualized in the beginning by male? Or not so much?
No.
And you were always able... you describe yourself as unladylike, or was that given to you?
No, that is how I describe myself. It was not given to me. It was just very organic because I am so unladylike.
Yeah, she masturbates driving.
Just watch the web series. I'm sure we could even, yes, you know, lower the bar with unladylike. But I think, no, I never felt sexualized at all in stand-up. I felt like I was treated fine. You know, obviously a lot of guys are getting booked in the beginning. Now it's sort of like, you know, a lot of female comics are highly in demand, you know, but back then, you know, maybe not so many women were being booked, but I was, I never felt like I was being discriminated against. Maybe I wasn't in the position to be discriminated against, like doing a big show and, you know, comparing what I'm getting paid to somebody else. You know, I never had that opportunity. I was just doing, I think when it was really at a point where a comedy was extremely biased in when I first started, I was getting up fairly often. Maybe it is because I had my cleavage out. I don't know.
Maybe,
I just didn't notice. But I didn't, I don't really think I felt that I was being sexualized. I sexualized myself, trust me. I always had my tits out.
Yeah.
Still to this day.
I've always
been that way. Always.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's me doing that. And I'm bringing that to the table.
Got
to
bring, look,
milk.
We bring whatever, yeah, you know, what we have in our arsenal, you know, yeah, to look at me, please, and listen to. Look and listen. Listen.
I love that, Gina.
Look at me.
Sexy mama. Yes.
All right. So I want to know a little bit about like the first like super break in the biz, other, you know, if you felt like you had.
I'm still waiting. I really am. But super break, what?
Well, you know, biggest show to date, things that make you whatever. You know,
listen,
like connections you've made.
I can't say like super break. I can't really say. I don't feel like I've had a super break.
Okay.
I don't think I've had any break. But there's been little milestones, things that are like, that have happened, like either I shot with this comic or I did little things, whether it materialized or not, for a pilot, or I started doing road work and started, you
those
know,
are comedy milestones.
When I was started headlining a lot, I remember that, when I was on the road and even in the city. You know, you guys had me headline a few times. You're so good to me, and I love you for that. You know, just the appreciation from your peers, especially
sure,
women, which I really appreciate and love. You have been so good to me in this business, and I love you with all my heart. I mean that.
Well, thank you.
It's
and
not
vice
the
versa.
Case. Sometimes women are the biggest. See you next Tuesdays to other women. Unfortunately, talk about really giving it to them. So when you find, you know, because it is competitive, people don't realize how competitive this business is. So if you find, you know, when women really open up and help each other in this business, it's, you know, this woman is a very special woman, you know.
Well, you
extraordinarily
you
special.
Certainly are, and I thank you. I'm going to just, you know, give that right back to you. So thank you for, you know, that.
Seriously.
What about comedy noir? You talk about your stand-up as being sort of comedy noir. What does that mean to you?
Okay, comedy noir is like, I guess it's not always fluffy and light. It can be a little bit of darkness. I don't know how to do comedy where it's just light. I can't. There's always just like I'm not saying an eclipse, but there's going to be a cloud floating through, okay? I'm sorry, okay? There
right.
may be rain. There may not be rain. The sun could come out right after that, but you know what I mean? There's going to be a little bit, you can see clouds kind of just floating by.
Yeah, I can't do comedy without
exactly.
talking about like a shitty ex, and I mean like, you know, there's
right.
a multitude of them, so it's not any one.
Otherwise, you know, you're not really being yourself, right? Because if your
right.
life is flowery, then your act should be flowery, right? But if it's not, then, you know, you're going to have those moments of like, you know, clouds. Clouds sound so fluffy and cute, don't
clouds,
they?
Clouds, moments of clouds.
Clouds.
You dating in comedy.
Oh, yeah. look at
her.
I never dated.
Within the cesspool.
I never.
You never dated within the comedy community?
Maybe I dated one comic years ago.
It wasn't Dave Juskow, was it?
No. Everybody
you
knows
did his...
that he likes boys, sweetie. No, I'm just kidding.
I hope he's listening. No, he doesn't. Can I say one thing? He doesn't retweet. That motherfucker. He doesn't retweet.
Oh, he doesn't retweet. Yeah, I know. Somebody has to. You know, I'm going to see him this week.
And tell him he needs to retweet.
He needs to start retweeting. He never does. But yeah, I never really got into dating other comics. I think maybe I saw Joe Matarese for a week in the very beginning, who is really sweet. Of course, it didn't. For some reason, I feel like it didn't end well. But I don't know if he hates me now. I think he might.
No.
But he's just the sweetest guy, and he was so sweet. And actually, when I was seeing him, he took me on the road with him right away, and I was opening up everything.
You up?
Just
he
kidding.
You
no, actually, yeah. we actually never slept together. I just want to say that.
Okay.
But he was really kind, and he took me on the road, and I started doing colleges. I was opening up for him doing colleges, so that was a really great experience.
That is a great experience.
He was really sweet and kind, and I know he's married now, and he has a kid. And
I think he has more than one kid.
Oh, really good for him. Yeah. He's probably a great dad.
Yeah. All right, so you did these. All right. In addition to comedy, you have this other side of you, this physical fitness guru mm-hmm. side of you. Sweet. Now, was this concurrent? Because I know at 18 you started working in physical fitness world, right? Gyms or whatever, and became a trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have these how tos, these videos that you did. They're comedic. Are they comedy related?
Yeah, those are comedy, but they do work. You know, like
all right, how to get the best. First of all, you have how to get the best glutes, how to get the best abs, and how to get engaged. What the hell, right? Isn't there one how
there's
to get
one,
engaged?
Yeah, there's that. That one's witchcraft, but that has nothing to do with exercising. That involves a candle and something that
how to get engaged.
Yeah, exactly. How to get engaged. Yeah,
I thought maybe it had something to do with the glutes and the abs.
No, that was totally separate, ladies. And you know, you're all witches, so you know what? Look it up.
Let's talk about the physical fitness side of things and how that was sort of concurrent in your rise to through comedy.
Right. Exercising, very important, of course, to keep me off the antidepressants, getting the endorphins flying. You know, at some point I used to start teaching so that I could be slim and hot. And then I realized how that's actually secondary to keeping your head together and not losing my mind. Exercise is very important for those things. So I think I continued for myself, and then in the process, helping people made me feel great, you know, because I've been teaching since I was 19. I started teaching classes. And then teaching fitness classes, kickboxing, step, everything. I taught everything except for yoga, effectively. I don't teach yoga. I know some moves. I implement yoga at the end of my classes. But,
which is good.
But, you know, primarily kickboxing, body classes. I've won a couple awards, actually, twice. I won for my classes in the city, toning and weight training. So I did that. A lot of comics took my classes, tons, throughout the years. We'd take classes.
Right. Even you worked with Mike Buschetti.
He looks amazing.
Now, Mike Buschetti, who you worked with on his own show and then, of course, on the Artie Lang show he's on quite often.
He is.
And he was substantially heavy.
Yes,
to say
yes.
the least. He was a big dude.
He was.
Love you, Mike. You were big. Let's face it. You talk about it. And then he would post and he would talk about how you single-handedly saved his life.
Well,
what was that process?
He had to step up.
He had to step up, all right, Mike.
You know, it's so weird. When I think about what he did and how he stepped up to the plate and how he continued, I've never seen anybody more determined and committed to this day. He is single-handedly the most committed person I've ever trained in my life. No one can even come close to him. He is
disciplined.
Yeah, he's very disciplined.
Really?
Yeah, he's very disciplined. I mean, he eats. I remember one time he came down to have a salad, and there were croutons on the salad. He picked those off. Can you imagine?
I can't.
Picked off the croutons. I couldn't even believe
That's
it.
Good,
because those are carbs.
If you guys know Mike, if you don't,
believe
Google
it.
Him. But yeah, that's
he
great.
He inhaled the rest of the salad, but he picked out. He picked off.
Sound guy Jim is cracking up.
He picked off those croutons, and he works out. It was scary. You know, his mother was very afraid that I was going to kill him because he's never really worked out. And I mean, he did. I guess he did like some martial arts when he was younger. You know, but then there was like 50 years. No, he's not that old. But there was like 40 years where he did absolutely nothing. You know, and but he. I'm amazed. at his commitment.
Yeah, and you've trained some. Yeah, he looks great. He really, really does. Mm-hmm. And I know he attributes that to you. So you've trained a lot of people. I know, like Rachel Dratch, you've trained.
Yeah. I still train her and a bunch of moms. We do kickboxing every Friday. And it's so much fun. And Anna Gasteyer sometimes joins in. I mean, she was a regular, but then she had to do Grease, and then she's been on the road. So then she'll come in. It's so funny. I'm like, wow, this is awesome.
It's SNL. A great life. I mean, there's a lot going on here with you.
And the moms, the moms that I was introduced to by Rachel Dratch, these incredibly amazing, sweet, awesome girls that I absolutely have grown to love. And we all do kickboxing. We have fun. We laugh. I mean, we make we're joking the whole time.
Is this all on Staten Island or here?
No, it's in the city.
It's in the city.
Every Friday. They rent a studio.
What time is this?
11 o'clock.
11 a.m.?
11 a.m. every single Friday. Yep.
How long is it?
1 hour.
Oh, okay. So I don't know who's listening, who's in the city, in New York City, because, I mean, this is heard all over, but could people find you to get in touch? How would they get in touch with
you about Facebook
this?
And Twitter.
As well as your comedy.
At Irene Bremis 13 is the best way to really reach me.
Okay, because you are really like one of those people. You are super, to use Mike Bush, she's super, 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 super,
super.
It's super, super, she's super encouraging on every level, so it would be really great. You know, for folks that
super, yes. And he is, he, of course, you know, he could have dropped the ball. We trained for 2 years. No, we trained for 1 year straight. And then since he's been training on his own. So there you have it.
Yeah, he has.
He's been continuing.
He has a new picture, like pretty much daily.
I know. He's addicted to selfies.
His handsome self. Well, yes. Who isn't? I mean, I am. I'm sort of like, you know.
Your selfies are just a little hotter than Mike's, though. Sorry, Mike. No, Mike is so cute. I love him.
Well, I'm
slamming hotness is what you
are,
sweetie.
I don't know. I don't even know what I want.
Yes.
All right. I want to get to the your Greek heritage and democracy, what that means to you and Donald Trump.
Well, okay, democracy.
Let's talk about him lately.
I think
too much.
That democracy doesn't exist. It's just a theoretical phrase, democracy. Yes, the Greeks did invent democracy and the Italians. Republic. I need to brush up on my history a little bit.
They say that the Greeks are the originators of democracy.
Yes, and they are. Yes, and I do believe they are. Now I don't know how Greece thinks.
Yeah, because I was curious on your the whole economic crisis
clearly,
over there.
Yeah,
and
their
everything.
Economic crisis seems very democratic. No, I'm just kidding. I am a I'm just kidding. I really am kidding. I am a Democrat. I am from Massachusetts. I was born and raised as a Democrat. And if I didn't like being a Democrat, I could easily just cross party lines if I believe in a candidate. For me, if I like somebody, I won't let any political party or stigma hold me back from crossing over to the other side.
I mean,
that's
just
believe
how I am.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. I think Donald Trump is on the spectrum. That's what I think. I think he is, if not Asperger's, definitely a high-functioning autistic. I do. I really do. He's completely, he presents all the signs, and I have a lot of experience with this.
Okay. Yeah, you do.
Know? I mean, and unfortunately, the rest of the world doesn't. Unless you have this in your family, you realize that this guy, he, you know, Tourette's and speaking your mind are two completely different things, okay? He's socially unaware. He doesn't realize what he's saying ever, and he's continuously contradicting himself, and he has like three catchphrases that he repeats over and over again, also a symptom of autism. Just three things. You just keep doing it. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. 100%. 100%. That's it. He just says three things over
huge,
and over again.
Huge,
it's going to be huge.
Great.
It's going to be great.
Gonna
he
make
doesn't
America
have a blueprint
great.
Or strategy. Ironically, he's very liberal. Okay. I mean, he's a liberal.
I mean, he was liberal enough to hire illegal immigrants to work on his buildings.
I think the Republicans, this shit backfired on them. You know what I mean? I think he possibly wanted to run as an independent in the beginning. Now they don't know how they're going to get him out. I think he's going to be assassinated if he's the candidate.
Whoa.
Yeah, by a Republican. That's who's going to, and it's not even going to be a liberal. It's not even going to be a Democrat. I think the Republicans are the ones that are the most horrified with Donald Trump being the nominee for the Republican.
It's horrifying. I just, you know, like we're talking about him, and I talk about him only to because it's just it's farcical to me, and it's farcical to me that anybody I know that has a modicum of intelligence, I don't know. I really don't know a lot about politics, mm-hmm. But here's the thing: I'd be the perfect candidate, like mm-hmm. to take my unknowing mind.
Yes, exactly.
And formulate it however you want to, mm-hmm. and then I'll go wherever. But I have enough sense to know that how the fuck, excuse me, do you get on television and say you don't know who David Duke is, mm-hmm. Or stand, support, condone in any way white supremacist groups? Who the fuck are you to even entertain the thought that you can invest in? You know,
entertain is the underlying. I think that's it. He's an entertainer, but he's entertaining his disgusting, despicable.
Great. It's a ratings game, and I've said this from the mm-hmm. start. This is the it's getting that name out, and I think John Oliver. And I didn't see the show, but I saw the clip. I don't know if you saw the clip. Mm-mm. It's a great clip of exactly what Donald Trump is. And I encourage anyone who isn't so pro Donald Trump, but if you're just kind of like on the, you know, just
on the fence,
what if you're on the fence? Just watch this and get look at it.
Yeah,
it gives you a complete history of who Donald Trump is.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And his actual name.
It's frightful. It is. I mean, like he said, he loves the poorly educated because they're the ones that are dumb enough to vote for him. I'm sorry, Porgy. I didn't mean that. I'm poorly educated. But I'm saying he is appealing to the stupid American. I'm saying that and standing by that because people are just listening to phrases. He will not be able to he won't be able to be proactive about anything that he's proclaiming. These are just blanket statements. He's not going to be able to do any. I don't even know what he's proclaiming to do. He doesn't really have a plan. He doesn't have a blueprint at all. He's not giving us everything that he talks about.
He just knows great people. He knows great people. He's going to put behind.
He's going to build a wall.
He's going to great people.
He's
going to
build a wall.
Great people. I know a lot of great people.
It's going to be a great wall. That's what he says. It's
great
a wall.
Great
and
wall.
If the former president says something, guess what? The wall just got 10 feet higher. I almost peed in my pants when he said that, actually. I thought it was so comical.
It just got 10
feet
higher.
It just got 10 feet higher. That's it. And everybody's applauding him like he just said the most intelligent, thing they've ever heard in their lives. I can't believe this guy. It's crazy.
It is fair to say.
It's entertaining and equally as scary and highly entertaining, so very frightful.
Well, I mean, how many of us, and this is true, how many of us would be paying attention to this? It's never got me more fired up to be so anti. I'm so anti it. I'm so anti this whole conversation. I'm anti, like, when I see respected, or so I thought, news outlets using Donald Trump's, you could see the hotel in the background.
Right,
from where
exactly.
Don't subliminally, you're already like throwing it in my face.
Right.
But now you're going to have Trump Tower in the background. Like, okay, America, we're not siding with
it's
anyone
scary.
In particular, but there's Trump Tower. I mean, give me a fucking break.
Exactly. And what's even scarier is, his stripper wife as our fucking first lady. I'm sorry.
Well, listen.
He's good president. Oh, I can't. I can't. I'm telling you, because you know that girl, he's always putting down people with green cards and whatever, and that bitch had the winning ticket for a green card. She went straight to the top. You know, Eastern Europe, two out of his three wives are for Eastern Europe. I always said if he wanted to build, he needs to build a wall between Eastern Europe and his penis. I think that's the ball that he really needs to focus on,
Well, that's the soundbite of the day.
Exactly. There you go. I did it.
That's our soundbite.
Okay, that's it.
If anybody was listening to this fucking show... Are you listening, fuckers? It's right here. She's got it. You're very outspoken, and I'm glad we got to this, because I'm right now, I subdued everyone with, this is Irene Bremis and the story of Irene Bremis, but this is who you are, and this is what's underneath you is this fiery spirit, that's what you bring to your comedy. That's what you bring.
Easy to do with him, too, right?
It's really easy. He's really easy. But there's a lot to be angry about.
Right. Well,
think?
I'm angry every time I wake up in the morning.
Us why.
I just wake up and I'm like, I get angry if I'm not having coffee. I'm addicted to caffeine. Is anybody addicted to caffeine?
Yes, I had about 3 cups already.
Yeah, I mean, I just love coffee. I need to be fired up.
Were you this angry? I mean, I wasn't this angry. Maybe I was just in the dark, but I wasn't this angry in my 20s. I wasn't. I was passionate, but not as angry.
Right. Oh, gosh, Gina, that's, you know what? That's like, I think that's the soundbite of the day right there. Okay. Passionate, but not angry. And I think that pretty much describes my 20s, opposed to now in my late 30s. Sorry.
Yes.
Seriously, sweetie? I totally agree. I was passionate.
Yes.
Because I've always been very politically active. When I was a teenager, I'd go to all the rallies, anti-racism and pro-choice. And I was always in Washington, always in Boston, holding up a sign, you know, me and all my, you know, hippie little friends. And I feel like there was a time that I was absent from that world when I started, like, in maybe my late 20s or 20s. And I miss that part. And I feel like I'm being reconnected to that through what's going on now. But at the same time, I was so passionate back then, whereas now I'm angry, like you said. You know, I'm just angry with the circumstances.
Therapists will say, like, you know, anger is a base emotion, right? It's base thing.
Foundation of sadness, depression.
Right. Exactly. Mm. And so I look at this like my father says, like it all started when women had to go to war. My father will say the breakdown of the family, I'm just saying, this is my dad. And, you know, if we all had healthy, loving, whatever that is, okay, mm-hmm. it would be nice. Some people really have that. They have the mm-hmm. house and the kids and the mm-hmm. 2.5s and the whole, and that's nice. Mm-hmm. And they built the American dream. And it should be out there for mm-hmm. people, right? It should be. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the hard knocks get us. That's what I wake up. Mm-hmm. You know, you wrote this. This is what you said. And I thought this was great because, you know, really, I want to just read it. You were like, I'm the underdog trainer. Those are my people.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I'm applying that to life. I feel like that, like when I wake up and I have to, this is what I'm not so angry about. But there's a lot of underdogs out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like whoever is the next president to consider that fact. Because the middle class does not exist, right?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't exist.
No, there is no middle class, absolutely.
I'm hanging by a thread. And mm-hmm. it's not because I didn't want the American dream. We were sold a dream, mm-hmm. right? We were sold it. We mm-hmm. were conditioned to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it doesn't work out. And when you're told and you're manipulated by media mm-hmm. and you're not the brightest bulb, I'll be honest, mm-hmm. I'm not the brightest. Okay, give me a loan. Give me a this. Give me a that. Give me a credit card. And
But it's entrapment. It's entrapment.
Right. So we got entrapped. Mm-hmm. I got entrapped.
Exactly.
Well, I'm maybe not that smart, but me and millions
exactly.
others are not that smart.
Me now, included. Exactly.
Now, I'm not saying you have to help us, but you got to help us.
Right. Exactly. You got us in this. Get us out.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, exactly. It's that simple. Donald Trump.
Get us out.
That's it.
How about those billions of dollars you're going to spend on a wall, or the Mexicans
are
going to spend
gonna
on
pay,
a wall?
And it just got 10 feet higher.
Bail out the American people.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's really something else.
Yeah.
It's like a circus, like everybody's saying. Absolutely.
All right. So what else are you mad about?
Well, you know, I'm not really mad. You know, I actually can't believe how I'm not really angry like I used to be a few years ago. For some reason, I'm much more relaxed now, believe it or not. I'm physically falling apart, but mentally, I feel pretty whole.
Okay.
I'm feeling pretty good. I think I have a great perspective. I think my family grounded me to the point of burial, I always have to add. You know, so that I know I have, I'm very realistic about life. I know that pragmatism doesn't really go with being an artist, but for me, I've always been I'm more grounded now than I've ever been, you know, about comedy, about life, relationships and people. And, you know, the grass is not always greener. I think I've accepted that completely, whereas I was always the grass is greener, I want this, I want that, you know. I was always comparing myself to people, and now I don't do that anymore. It's weird. I'm content, which is I'm not over the moon, but I'm not down in the dumps either.
I agree with that.
Even kiltered, sort of.
I think, you know, my day started, you know, talking about what makes us angry or how we operate. Mm-hmm. My day started with a text from someone, and it was the kind of text I didn't expect to see, and it set a tone right from the minute.
Absolutely.
I was disappointed, and then right after that text, something happened which was really enlightening and encouraging. And then, but the thing is, not like my range of emotions go from like immediately being pissed mm-hmm. to immediately being like I had no time to acclimate to the day. But the difference now is I would be sort of on a tirade about the first thing mm-hmm. that I got this morning. Instead, now it's like the way I process is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, does come from age, mm-hmm. Maturity.
It does.
Therapy, too, because I had a pause when I'm agitated.
But you have every reason to be agitated when you're getting a text that's like very, you know, I hate texts. Sometimes they're so intrusive, you know, and they're always subject to tone. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like pick up the phone and call, you know. I wouldn't even, if something's important, it could easily be misread. That's why comics get in trouble all the time with tweeting. You have to be careful because there is a tone in texting, tweeting, writing something down in an email, you know, so that's going to initially upset you. But the fact that you can bounce back and sort of look at the positive right out there shows how far along, you know, therapy has brought you.
It's brought me to
I don't even think I could do
listen,
that.
You want dumb? You got me. you want something?
Dumb, you got me too.
You want something done? You have to do it yourself, and that's kind of where I think, you know, we as women in this industry, like you did
especially a lot
for yourself. I'm still carving it out. Mm-hmm. Still carving it out.
Very, very capable and always everything that you do. Stellar job. You do such a great job and you really bring it. You do.
One last comment before mm-hmm. we got to wrap up soon. But, in line with the physical fitness that you do. I know this is just putting it out there. Cheryl Teagues,
Did I like her?
She commented on the Sports Illustrated model that, the fuller figured gal.
Oh, yeah, right.
And said, you know, I don't think she meant it in a bad way. I just wondered if you saw it.
Right, what did
she
say?
Because she said that you should have a certain size waist if you're a model, and that's not exactly, you know, what the modeling industry, something to that effect.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I don't know. I could pull up.
Well, you know, here's somebody that's not willing to move with the times. You know what I mean? And who knows what she was doing, throwing up in the bathroom. Maybe she didn't mean it like that, so I don't want to attack her.
Right.
But that's like a ballsy statement. I didn't read it. I'm just listening to what you're saying right now. But why is it that thin girls have to corner the market in modeling? Like, why does that have to be the status quo? Why can't we change? That's the problem people should be proud of their bodies no matter what they look like. My only concern and why I train people is health, both physical and mentally. They need to be healthy. That's it. Because honestly, if you're really overweight, I love anybody's body type. I think people look different in all different body shapes and sizes. I really, really do. But if I can't fit into my skinny jeans, shit's going. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, sorry.
I've never fit into skinny jeans.
Okay, whatever. Okay, skinny jeans shouldn't make you look fat. I do love different body types. My thing is, are you healthy? Okay, along with a fuller body and maybe if you've got extra 30 pounds, right? It's all in the right places. You look really hot. Sometimes if it's up top, you're putting yourself at risk for heart problems, you know. Hopefully it's in your butt because there's really less damage caused in your butt. But once you get it right here in your midsection, cortisol levels go up. You're prone to high blood pressure, stroke. I mean, a lot of stuff. How many comics do we know that have gone through strokes? And you know, it's very so that's what it is for me. It's mental and physical health. Yeah, and Cheryl Teagues.
Well, ultimately, I think she backtracked
in the 80s.
I think the way she was approached, I think that the comment came out sort of carelessly. I don't think ultimately she meant that, but it was an odd thing to say. How about just embraced the fuller figured gal from the start. Like, good for her.
Listen, you know, to this. Cheryl Teagues. I thought she was dead. I mean, if you're going to finally speak and resurrect your career, guess what? Say something prudent and encouraging for women.
How about recognizing that women of any size, you know, as long as they're healthy, should be
celebrated.
And how about when you hear the name David Duke, you just go, "Hey, that guy stinks." How about that? How about that? Boo, boo, boo. That's bad.
Yes, baby.
I like to bring in Bing.
Ba-bang.
All right, we have to wrap up. So what do you see next for yourself in the next few minutes?
In the next few minutes, I see myself using your bathroom.
Great.
Yeah, because I got a tinkle.
We keep it real.
One of the side effects of, older. Anyway, I don't want to bring that up. But okay, so.
What's coming up
Twitter,
for you?
Okay, what's coming up for me this week, I'm at Greenwich Village Comedy Club on the 3rd.
On the 3rd.
At 8 o- oh, I don't know, 9 o'clock, I think.
All right, and so then she's at Greenwich Village Comedy Club in New York City.
And then I'm on John Fugelsang's Frank Conniff show.
Great.
On Sirius, 121, channel 121. I'm so excited about that.
When is that?
It's on March 7th at, I think, 4 o'clock.
I love John Fugelsang.
I love him so much.
Love
He's so
him.
Great. I did his show. It went really well. He invited me back, and they said, "Let's make this a regular thing," and I'm thrilled. I'm so excited.
Yeah. I'm excited for you. I'm
really
happy
excited.
To hear
These
that.
Guys are really smart. I'm the dumbest one on the panel, so that's great. So I make them look incredibly even smarter. It was so much fun. He's such a sweetheart. I love Frank so much, and I love John. Love John.
That's great.
They're so
All
great.
Right. So people
love
can find you there.
Love you so much. Yes. And thank you so much for having me on this show. This was so much fun. Jim Vern, Tikanis. I love him.
You will be back, and of course, upcoming. I'll be at the Broadway Comedy Club. Actually, tonight I'll be there.
Yay!
But got a couple of Broadly funnies coming up, so we'll get you on those too.
I love it. You always do, and I love you. I love your show. Also,
Thank
B-Box
you.
Radio. I'm sorry, Tuesday 6:30 to 7:30. The Scuttlebutt.
Holy Christ!
Sorry about that. Yeah.
Yeah, you can hear Irene
with Rick Younger, my co-host, who I love.
Yes. Okay. And the folks can find you. We're on Twitter again.
At Irene Bremis 13.
Okay. So tweet to her and check out her website, which is?
The website is onladylike.com, and Plan B is the web series.
Yeah. We're pretty outspoken and we're angry.
And we just drink a lot of coffee. We fuel the fire.
We fuel the fire.
That's it.
All right. Thanks so much for listening to the Red Light Podcast Redux. I'm your host, Gina Savage. Thanks again, Irene.
Thank you.
Love you too. WROM Radio listeners, Detroit. Please subscribe on iTunes. Follow the Red Light at Red Light NYC on Twitter. And we'll be back next week. Thanks, Jim Vern.
Thank you.
Sound.